Welcome to Rock That Relationship, a podcast about all things relationship with Corey and Tracy.
Now let's get real and start creating relationships that rock.
Welcome everyone to Rock That Relationship. We are here with our season all about past life relationships and what we learn from them, how we grow from them. And we have an episode today that is just so cool. I think it's just going to blow your minds. We are so lucky to have on Miriam Katz, who's an actor, writer, and public speaking coach. And Miriam has an upcoming podcast called X Appeal coming out September 21st. And we're going to learn all about it and how this ties into past life and past relationships and what we can learn. So Miriam, we're so excited to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
It's a delight to be here.
Well, awesome. Well, welcome to the show. And, you know, you had reached out through email to me and said what you were doing. And I was just like blown away. I thought this is the coolest thing, but our listeners have no idea what that is yet. So can you tell us a little bit about what your project is? X Appeal podcast, how does it work? What prompted it? Just start from the beginning. What in the world are you doing? And, just go for it.
I am interviewing every single person I have ever dated. I sometimes say have been romantic with on any level. Mm.
I was going to say, what does dating mean to you? Like, are we talking?
If I've just gone on one date with someone, I don't count that because I could have not had any romantic intentions, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, except for my first date in fifth grade, because I definitely had romantic intentions, but we did not kiss, but I count it. But yes, there usually usually a kiss is involved in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The very young ones. Some of them are years-long relationships.
Mm. Wow.
And then some are maybe just a few months. Sometimes those relationships that were just a few months, I absolutely still need clarity on.
Mm-hmm.
In one case, there's a stripper I hooked up with in a booth for five songs.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So, and that counts. And I tracked her down and she was
wow.
Very cool. And yeah, I've had this life of a lot of romantic experiences, and now I'm going back and reconnecting and reopening the door, not to keep it open, actually uh-huh. more to really put it away.
Mm.
So Corey, you had asked how it began. I was taking a very long solo road trip to a friend's wedding and felt the weight of my past relationships. I could tell it was that, and this idea came to my mind to record my reconnections with all these people. The intention was to put it away, to have second breakups, to say goodbye, to have a kind of funeral. And I'd had the idea for a few years, but we are all very, very, very busy people, and so I didn't actually want to deal with having to do it. And then I was dating somebody who was terminally ill, and I realized I really had to do it if I wanted to include him, which I definitely did. So that started it 2.5 years ago with my two interviews with him, and he'll be the last episode of the first season. So the 10th episode will be Rob. Yeah.
Wow. What? So you wanted to, it's interesting because you use the word funeral on these relationships, right? And then the person that inspired you to do this was terminally ill, right? Did he pass away?
You did, yeah.
Oh, so sorry.
I think there is a mortality story through it. What I really actually like about the podcast is on the one hand, there's this fun aspect of it, this sexy aspect, this titillation, these crazy stories of a stripper, and then there is this feeling. Yeah. And for me, actually, being with somebody who was dying, and then I also volunteered at hospice, that has brought a lot of joy into my life. That has really made me grateful to be alive. And so, yes, there is on the one hand this mortality aspect, this funeral, this goodbye. And also, I actually think saying goodbye to all these people has put me in a really good mood. And has sort of gotten some of the gunk out.
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I am happier. Used to be a cop and I've worked at domestic violence shelter. Yeah. And I've done a lot of that stuff. And so I've been around a lot of dead people, dying people. I've been with people as they died. I used to do stuff for people with AIDS back in the 90s. And so that has given me a totally different perspective that I find that people don't understand. And so like my wife, I'm trying to get all my affairs in order. And she's like, stop talking about your death. And I'm like, but this is imminent, right? And once we understand like what our limitations are here, like we can choose to be happier, I feel like.
Wait, can you say more about the limitations thing? Because I totally connect with it, but I want you to explain it a little bit more.
Because like we don't know how long we're going to be here. We might be gone tomorrow. We could be gone at the end of this episode, right? And so like we should choose joy. And there's so many people who don't choose joy in this world. And it's really sad to see. And it's not like I've been this way since I was a kid, because it took me a long, long time to come to this realization, you know? And a lot of it was through dating and like people kind of treating you crappy or whatever. And then you're like, what is my life for? What do I want out of my life? You know? So I find this fascinating, this project you're doing. It's so interesting, your choice of words of funeral. And then it involves someone who's terminally ill who inspired it. But it is going back and saying like, what did I do in this life? And then it will help you and inform how you want to move forward, I think.
For sure. That's why the past lives connection seemed so clear to me.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah. So we're talking about past exes in this lifetime.
Yes.
But our podcast this season is about like past. But maybe, I don't know if you believe that. We believe that some of the people you date in this lifetime are people that you have to resolve stuff with from past lives.
Yeah. Or that they're teaching you something that you need to learn in this life, which feels like a similar concept.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, how did you track these people down? Like, did you just sit down one day and just make a list of all these people and then just look like all over social media? Or have you been keeping in touch with some of them? And then were they receptive to talking? Because I can tell you that if there are some people out there that would not be welcome, like welcome an email or a call from me to do this.
It's a big range. I didn't sit down just simply one day. Often if I'm working out, I will think of people and I'll run into the next room and write it down. If I travel, that will often jog memories of people. Because these are people, it could be somebody I truly kissed in an elevator one time. So they will come in random moments, but I have a running list. Right now it's 111.
Wow.
So I'm what trying does to do 100.
Well, how does it help you to talk to somebody like you had a one short time interaction with? How does that help?
I think it is meaningful who we are attracted to. Even if it is truly a drunken kiss at a bar, that sounds a little silly and exaggerated, but I think there's meaning in what we choose to spend all of our time doing, but there's somebody that I dated in the fifth grade or asked on a date in the fifth grade. So I had never really had a conversation with him before, during, or after the date. I think we talked about pizza during the date.
Right.
But getting to know him and hearing that he's funny, and also hearing his perception of me. And then I interviewed a girl I was friends with in the fifth grade, and she was talking about the raw sexuality I brought to our fifth grade class, which is so
wow.
funny. So I think even I didn't realize that was people's perception of me. I did have a lot of, honestly, early sexuality, but just to go back and learn that. And then I think being drawn to certain people means that you want to collaborate with them or you want to learn something from them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of tracking people down, in that particular case, the fifth grade date wasn't on social media. I connected somebody I knew he was friends with in the fifth grade. He knew what law firm he worked at. I emailed the law firm, but didn't want to say anything about the show. So had to
Yeah.
And then other people, I put a call to action at the end of my trailer about my first kiss. At summer camp, and somebody knew his sister and connected us.
Wow.
The trailer actually. So there is a bit of a sort of mystery aspect to it. Some people are my white whales. I don't yet know how to find them, but I think through the show it's possible. Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit the recurring story alongside the interviews, is how to find them and then how to, I'm going to say, encourage them to be on the show. Because some people, either because of their partners or because they're uncomfortable with their past or because they're shy, I'm not picking comedians or show people necessarily. And that's kind of what I really love, is a lot of these people have said, I have never been on a podcast before. You're the only person I would do this for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it really depends. Some people have said soft no's, but I'm going to be working on this for a while. And so I'm going to keep on inspiring them and trying to get them to say yes. My goal truly is to get everyone, and maybe to do a version of it that feels appropriate for them and their lives. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, have you had any really like horrible breakups? I mean, I think that I would literally lose my lunch if I had to, for some people, if I had to think about reaching out to them and what they would, A, how they would respond to me, and B, if they did say yes, what on earth are they going to say on this podcast, right? Like, are there any hesitations or fears that you have?
I mean, some of it is just embarrassing. There's somebody that it took a year and a half to schedule it. He's famous, and it was really embarrassing to have to keep on asking him.
Wow.
But for the sake of journalism, I felt like I had to. Eventually, I had to go through his manager. And then we had this beautiful conversation, and he cried on the podcast, and it was so wonderful. And that's kind of a lighter version. That's not a terrible breakup. There are people who are nasty. There's someone I dated who I called the devil, and I'm going to talk to him.
Wow.
I want to find out what the story was. You know, if anybody who's willing to do it, I really want to talk to. I have learned something. I would say I've learned something major from every single conversation, truly.
About yourself or about life in general, relationships in general?
Probably both. Mm-hmm. But even in the specific, something I didn't know about what was going on with them that makes me understand the relationship better, and it makes me feel better.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think about myself, maybe why I was, in the case of a toxic person, why I was drawn to them at that moment in my life. Why I'm not drawn to them anymore. That's a great feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of it wouldn't necessarily, not every single thing is a perfect little lesson like that. Also, some of it's just messy.
Right.
Yeah.
But that in those cases, it's probably more peace be with you. But it does feel good to say it kind of in an official way, maybe especially because so much dating now is a little more nebulous. Endings can be a little vague sometimes, especially people that maybe you've only maybe gone on 5 dates with, something like that. So some of it is figuring out little mysteries, and then I don't have to run scripts. I think that's the feeling I had in that long car ride. Not a specific person who made me feel bad in a specific way, more of a general heaviness and just energy put towards the past that I'm now saying goodbye to, in a way that really makes me think people should do something, some version of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's amazing.
We did a cord cutting at some point in our podcast recording just about kind of toxic people in general, right? But it is interesting. I mean, I being a lesbian, I've kept in contact with or very close to some of my exes, right? And so it never occurred to me. The ones I don't talk to, I just don't want to talk to. But I do think some would be interesting just to hear what they have to say about me. I don't really care so much about them anymore, what they have to say. But I do like their perception of me. But then it does beg the question, if I don't care what they think, well, then why would I care what they say about me? But it might help me. For me, being in relationships has now help me to get to where I do think that I'm the best that I can be in a relationship, you know, being in those other ones and then learning and having to go to therapy and all that to process a lot of stuff. And it is interesting because it's like, okay, well, now I'm the best version of myself. And so I'm married. I just got married in July. And so I'm very happy about that. And we were talking about that last night. We're like the happiest both of us have ever been. And the best, you know, for each other. So would I even ever need to go back? Probably not. But I've done so much therapy about those relationships, and I do it at the time, right? So it's interesting. Do you feel like this is like a form of therapy? Or are you having a therapist do this journey with you?
I'm not currently in therapy. I've definitely talked to therapists a lot about a lot of these people. I think there are things that it feels really good for me to be able to say to a person. And some of those are maybe that they didn't treat me well. But a lot of the time it's actually a certain kind of care. That's why I think there's the funereal aspect to it. Mm. Sometimes it's saying that they were very important to me, and it's things I maybe would never say to them if it were not for this context. And even in some cases, I am good friends with certain exes, but we don't have conversations about the relationship anymore. And so it's just this place to do that and still discover new things. It's almost a safe space because it's recorded. I mean, that's a really odd thing about recording. I think people are a little more heightened, a little oddly more articulate. There's some energy in it. And then honesty can come through. And so if even if somebody is telling me something I don't particularly want to hear, I'm very interested in the truth. So I'm hearing...
Pre-talk to them before the recording? Or
I try very hard to not. I try very hard to not. Some people have required me to go to lunch with them. Some people are concerned about whether I'm going to bring up something. And so if they have certain parameters, I'm happy to abide by that, and that'll be a conversation in advance. Some people who've said no, I've had a conversation with to try to turn it into a yes, which I've been at a high success rate. And, but no, I try to actually, as much as possible, I try to do it in person, wait for people who don't live in LA to stop by LA, and then I also will have the equipment set up, and I will direct them right to the table and try to say nothing so that the shakiness in our voice is captured, the almost deer in headlights feeling is captured.
Right.
Also, you hear the change in how we're speaking. Maybe we're speaking very quickly at the beginning or talking over each other, and then towards the end, we kind of drop in. My voice also, I've noticed, sounds pretty different in each conversation.
Based on your confidence level?
Confidence level, comfort level, closeness to the person. Yeah, there's just different anxiety. Yeah, it sounds a little different with each person. I also think I have a bit of a matchy-matchy thing sometimes. I will try to meld, so I might sound a little different. So that's been interesting.
This could be a good, you could branch us off into a Netflix show where you bring two exes together to talk. Like, Love is Blind. Love is Blind, but exes together in the pod, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, talking. Right? Comparing some notes or something. Yeah, that's...
Resolving past issues, you know?
Wow.
Right.
Like, where they have to be in the pods and really talk to each other without, you know?
I love that. Because then it ties into, like, that unconscious coupling, right? Like, or decoupling or whatever it is that they do where you're really mindful about that. But I had a question for you kind of related to this, because you're having these, like, really profound kind of conversations with people and you're uncovering and unpacking. Has this process, like, jump-started a reconnection with anyone? Not for dating per se, but just like someone that you're like, wow, here we are. We circle back around and we put some closure on this, and it feels like maybe a rebirth, not just a funeral. Or if they all just sort of like closed and gone.
Wow. I think the rebirth has been more energetic. There's maybe a birth of a really good feeling about a person that maybe I felt more confused about. There hasn't been a romantic reconnection, and I haven't then particularly wanted to become close to that person. There is someone in particular, the second episode, we dated when he was in an open marriage, and then they closed the marriage up because things with us got a little too intense, and they realized it wasn't safe for their marriage.
Yeah.
And we aren't in touch at all. But I feel very connected to him. And I think that conversation, I already had felt that way, but that conversation is there's so much love in it. And so I feel that there's some kind of a relationship with him that's energetic rather than actual.
Do you feel like maybe there's, you know, like, as we talk about past lives, right, and how we feel, sometimes we feel just like a connection we can't explain to certain people, and then other people just feel like random people we run into, and we have these serendipitous moments, or we have these, I don't know, just kind of that feeling like you've known someone before, that familiarity. It sounds like as you're describing this person, maybe that's the case. Is that so? Or have any of these people kind of, you've been felt like I was supposed to meet you and maybe I've known you before in a past life?
Yeah. I mean, and even situations sometimes that were difficult. I mentioned that famous person. I think he's going to be episode 3. And I'm just saying famous person because all of them are anonymous. And that's why I'm not a video podcast.
Yep.
And, but, you know, maybe someone can sleuth it out. But I think in that case, it was very painful to be with him. And his talent was a really major part of the relationship. And I think I felt, it was many years ago, I think I was 29, 30 when we dated. There was a feeling of he was the show and I was in support of the show. And it was such an unpleasant feeling. And I think being rubbing up against that kind of creativity made me realize that I really needed to put creativity more at the center of my life. And now it is.
Okay.
It is this major catalyst for me. And I think sometimes those people that are really difficult in some way can be the biggest catalyst.
Yep. I mean, we hear about that a lot. And we've talked with some folks who do work in past life stuff. They talk about karmic partners, right? The toxicity is what you're unfortunately kind of experiencing because you have some kind of unresolved something that's supposed to give you a lesson. And then once you have that lesson, that bond sort of breaks and moves along. But you somehow take some life-changing lesson from that.
I hope it doesn't have to be toxic to get the lesson.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Wouldn't that be great? I know. I was trying to do inventory of my karmic partners, and it's not like they're necessarily toxic, but we got ourselves into a cycle that didn't feel good. And from that stirred up something that I'm not sure would have come out if it did feel good, if that makes sense. So I don't think all karmic partners are like toxic, but I feel like there's something about the relationship that becomes kind of either banging up against each other or, you know, really push-pull, some kind of tension that exists to teach that lesson. But then again, there are a lot of people who probably have met karmic partners where that isn't the case. But I think sometimes you just know, you feel it like, why am I still with you? What am I doing here? But at the same time, you're not leaving, but, you know, and you're like, I'm supposed to take something from this. And maybe 30 years down the road, you're like, wow, okay, that's what that was all about.
Which could be present or past life, right?
Right.
To work stuff out in this life.
Exactly. I think I felt that way about Rob. I met Rob, who had terminal cancer and then died. We were together for the last 2 years of his life. And there was a feeling immediately that I had to do it. And I knew he had terminal cancer when I met him. And I said yes to it. And I didn't know why. And I was very confused. And I questioned whether I was creating a drama in my life, or I questioned even how much my friends were going to have to help me and support me.
Right.
It didn't make any sense. And it was totally the right thing to do.
Did that lead you to hospice, or were you involved?
I was already
in hospice?
Doing hospice. Mushroom trip led me to hospice.
Interesting. Yeah. What happened on that? I don't know about that.
Discussed in the first episode of the podcast, I was with somebody and we broke up on mushrooms. And one of my other conclusions was I'm a caretaker and I need to work in hospice. And I think that a little bit came out of COVID because I'm a very extroverted person. I'm a real doer, and being forced to be less social, obviously, and doing much, much, much less showed me that other side of myself that can be more passive, which you need for hospice work. That's a little logic-y, but also, yeah, I took mushrooms and it was a very clear lesson, total download. You need to do this. And I started doing it. It was super clear that I was meant to do it. And there's a little channeling that goes on. There's somebody I met. She's 93. She had just gotten her both legs amputated. And I asked, this question came, did you ever roller skate as a kid? And she said, oh my God, yes. And started talking to me about her childhood. And we totally connected. And it was this entree into her happy times in her life that led to us getting really close. So I was doing hospice work, but had just started truly. I'd started maybe doing it for about a month, volunteering, and then met Rob on a dating app. Had nothing to do with hospice.
Isn't that interesting? But you were probably the right person for him because how many people would be able to handle that, right?
I was completely the right person for him, which then showed me something I was capable of that I had no idea. I had no idea I would be capable of supporting somebody in their death. Yeah.
Wow. So what in your mind, what are some of the biggest, I don't know if you want to say lessons. Like, do you have, are there themes that are emerging for you? Like, as people are talking, are there some lessons you just like caught you off guard? Like, wait a minute, I just learned this about myself I didn't even think about. Like, what kinds of things are you really learning?
There was somebody who, when we dated, he knew that he was a sex addict. And then when we spoke, he said he considers it more of an intimacy disorder. And I had never heard that term, but it was extremely helpful in terms of thinking about him because he and I got along very, very well, super connected, both in terms of banter and intellect, and then also a lot of chemistry. So he was somebody I really could see myself with, and then it ended very quickly. And had always been very confused by. And it really made me understand some people that I haven't yet spoken with, this idea of intimacy disorder. I think it's something that a lot of people have, this
What
fear
is
of,
that? Can you, yeah, describe it?
for him, I think it's a fear of disappointing someone if they get close to him, so he can't handle it when people get close to him. But he wants it, but he's afraid of it. And so that leads to, yeah, the kind of behavior that I think a lot of people see on dating apps.
Like disorganized attachment, come here, go away.
Oh, I've never heard that term, disorganized. That totally makes sense. Yes. And a little bit of love bombing and a, yes. Yes.
100%. You should read just about disorganized attachments, one of the four
Totally.
attachment styles. And that's the whole thing is they want it, but they can't handle it. That's how I used to be until a lot of therapy. Cause I was the, oh, I want to be in this relationship. And then I get one, I'd be like, oh, get away from me. How can I get
Right.
out of this
Closed
relationship?
in. Yeah. I think I used to feel it more because I did open relationships for many, many years and it was fun. I don't want to say I was just doing it, but that disorganized thing, I think a lot of people experience and get confused by. So that's a pretty specific thing that really made me understand a bunch of people from the past that they may have been afraid.
Rather than taking it personally, like it's something about you, it's their attachment issue. I think under that, we started this whole podcast because of our breakups, right? And then that's why we got started. And so I really got into attachment stuff. That's the most interesting thing to me is this attachment styles of people and that. I mean, there people think, oh, you can't change, but you can. I went from being a disorganized, having a disorganized attachment style to now having a secure attachment. And that's after a lot of therapy. And I think part of it is the person, the personality, the situation, right? But it enables me to handle a lot of things I would not have been able to handle before if I hadn't really worked on my attachment issues. And that the disorganized came from childhood of, a lot of trauma in childhood. Right? So, oh, I need to get close to this person, but no, they could be a danger to me, so I better kick them away,
Yeah, I definitely
Yeah.
know.
I think there's a lot of people with that.
And in terms of other things I've learned, some of it is, and I was aware of this before, but my sensitivity, I think, has been brought to light just by working with something so vulnerable. I grew up on the Northeast, lived in New York for a long time, had a real tough girl thing going. Already moving to LA and focusing more on being an actor brought out more of my vulnerability, and therapy made me more comfortable with it. But I think this project shows me my sensitivity, and I think that's been a really nice thing to hold and show to the world when I put
Well,
out the
and you're
show.
making yourself so vulnerable, right?
And I think how differently we feel later. So I know how I would feel if people said certain things to me in the middle of the actual breakup, but doing it later, I can, at the same time as I'm talking about my vulnerability, I also don't care as much. And that's an amazing feeling just to have that bird's eye view on later, you will not care as much. later you will feel differently.
Right.
And it won't be this heightened open wound. And you can be a little more objective and say, oh, you never made any sense for me at all. I was so into you and so attached to getting you to like me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So do you like, are you in some of these recordings and someone says something that kind of feels like a bomb drop and you're just like, okay, great. You know, like sort of receiving it. I would be like, what? You know, trying not to be defensive. Like how do you manage that?
I don't know.
Are you? I mean,
well, no one is saying anything rude exactly. There was somebody who was maybe a little bit rude, but I was already aware of who they were.
Mm-hmm.
I think in general, because it's a little bit later, I am a bit more objective and I'm also asking for it.
Well, that's true.
So there's a kind of comfort in that. It isn't exactly a bomb being dropped because in some cases I'm saying, okay, so why didn't you like me?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a crazy question to ask, but I am asking it. So there's a kind of comfort in I'm prepared for it. And sometimes I'll even feed them potential answers to try to, so they feel comfortable.
Do people say I didn't like you or just like the circumstances weren't right or maybe we weren't a great match?
Somebody said it was that I was older, even though that was something that was on my dating profile. He also said that it was because I was an actor and he already felt sort of unstable in his life. And so he didn't want to date someone who's unstable. But again, that was something that was very clear from the beginning. And yeah, I don't think it's necessarily that people, yes, there is some backfill of it was the situation, but I am trying to really open it up to the honesty of there was something about me to them that didn't work. Cause I really want to know that if I can hear it. Again, part of it's a journalistic endeavor.
Right.
How interesting. If someone will say, you annoyed me, or I wasn't attracted to you, because I even think if someone says, I'm not attracted to you, that's actually okay too. So there is a kind of radical element to it, which is almost none of that, even if it does sound incredibly personal, it's fine. It's fine if someone doesn't like you.
Right. There's a book out there. It's called The Courage to Be Disliked.
Whoa.
Right?
Is that Japanese?
I don't know. I need to look it up.
I tried listening to it and I didn't like it.
I'll put it in the show notes. Oh, I think it is Japanese. It's translated
in English.
The book had the courage for you to not like it, Tracy.
Oh, good. See? Screw that book.
I will put it in the show notes for anybody who wants to read it, though.
No, it sounds really interesting. And also the book about disorganized attachment.
Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes as well. Because
I mean, I agree with the premise, but the book was boring.
Yeah.
I was listening to it on audio, but I think that that's the whole thing. You can get it from the title, The Courage to Be Disliked. Yeah. I mean, that's what, you know, you talk to kids and try and help them grow up, and it's like, well, some people like you, some people won't. You have to live your life for yourself, not other people. And I'm a divorce attorney, so I'm talking to a lot of people who are getting divorced later, like after really long marriages, 30 something years, and it's like they've just had it. And I'm like, you have to live your life for yourself, not for anybody else, you know?
And that's not something that has come easily to me. I think I am a people pleaser in a good way. I think it's really gotten a bad reputation in the last 5-6 years. I think it's nice to connect. I think it's nice to be kind. I think it's, I think it's elements of people pleasing. There could be another word for it. It's being a human. But yes, I think I do have those elements. And so it's not always easy for me to not be liked. But in this case, years later, I already know the relationship ended. I would rather know the truth of what happened than be stuck with those questions, because those questions are actually more damaging to me to have these. I'd rather put it away if it feels like they're speaking the truth. Some people don't totally want to tell the truth, but I try very hard to encourage people to say something I may not want to hear by even giving suggestions, by even saying, was it that? Was it that? Yeah.
Do you think that hearing from a person who, like, things blew up or got ugly or whatever, you decided mutually to end it, or one person told you they're ending it. Do you think that's different than if you talk to somebody who was a ghoster? Like, is there more pain to being ghosted? Or looking back, do you think there's more pain to being ghosted or in, like,
more pain to being ghosted, for sure.
Even if you don't even know the person.
I think with text, there's not much of a reason to ghost somebody. I think if you go on one date and both of you never text again, that is not
right. Ghosting. Right.
But if there's a message left unresponded to, it is unbelievably easy to say, hey, I'm not feeling it, some vague thing. Because you'll get the idea. Yeah, I think it's way more painful to be ghosted because you keep holding on. So the relationship is still
the wonder. Right.
The wonder, the yep. hoping. Yep. Yeah. No, ghosting is brutal.
Right. There's no excuse for it. People should just be mature to have a conversation.
I know, but they don't.
Honestly, do it on text. You know, yeah. Be mature about it, but just say it. It's pretty easy to do. We're almost too lucky to have text as an option for breakups.
Yeah. Right, right.
But some people don't like clarity. You know, there's just people that are a bit of a mess. I've been ghosted professionally. I've been in the middle of a project. Right. And then people just stop responding. That happened recently.
Right.
I was in the middle of a project, and then the project is just over. And it was a bunch of energy writing to this person several times. You know, it just cut the cord. Get that?
Yeah.
Because they know. It's not that they're deciding. They know. Yeah.
Right. They're avoiding.
Those are called avoidance.
Yep. They're avoiding that because it's not even conflict. Because if you just send a text and say, I'm not feeling it, that's not conflict. I mean, unless the other person starts to engage with you, then you don't engage back. But everybody deserves an answer. And that's the thing, too, is I think when you're talking about this idea of kind of ruminating and speculating and thinking what ifs and whys and wonders and all this stuff, that stuff takes so much mental and emotional energy.
Yeah.
And it's pointless because some of these things, I mean, are for decades earlier, like what you're talking about. And being able to kind of close the door on each of these is almost like it's a gift. Like I think about, I would like to have the door closed on everything without actually having to close the door. Does that make sense? Like I'd like to wake up one day and like the door's closed and I gotta wait, but not actually having to like close the door myself. You know what I mean? And so, because I love what you're doing. I don't like ambiguity and I want closure, but gosh, the process, you know, would make me super nervous, but I'm just amazed at what you're doing. I'm absolutely amazed.
I think you could do it.
I would have to start out with some easy ones. Give me some loud softball ones. Like,
no, I'm gonna say Corey shouldn't do it.
That's her. Okay. I don't know all the details. There is somebody that I will be asking for this next season who was a little nasty and didn't take care of my heart, and I don't actually expect. Some of these feel very loving and very warm, and I feel really nice after. I don't expect that from this. I'm just seeing if there's anything to find. And I think maybe the thing I'll learn is more, oh, this was somebody you were drawn to. You two actually spoke about this on a recent episode about your part in a difficult situation. And that is another thing I really believe in. Yeah, I really believe in taking ownership and accountability and why was I drawn to somebody who wasn't very nice?
Exactly.
What lesson was I learning, and also why did I, even after the very first time, continue to be super drawn to this person?
Right.
Possibly through a conversation I will figure that out a little bit more. And if not, it'll just be interesting to the audience to hear somebody not be very nice. I don't know if we'll do it. Yeah. But I hope. Yeah, I really hope. And I think for the people that have, there's two people that are not totally comfortable with it because of their partners. Somebody did it, didn't want to do it, and then his wife made him. I was like, yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Wow.
And then with a couple people, it's a little bit the sort of normie cliche of my partner's not comfortable with this, even though I'm not trying to have sex with your husband, I promise. But yeah, right. I think I'm trying to move past some of those norms, some of the sort of sitcom stories of I hate my ex, and if someone is talking to an ex, that means something strange. That those are still things you even hear in
right.
relationship podcasts all the time.
Yep.
These corny stories. And a lot of the podcast is sort of about getting more nuanced and not just sort of saying those standard stories.
Yeah. Wow. So wait, so if you're talking to all these people, you're learning about yourself, you're learning about these relationships, you're putting closure on things. What is this doing for your current, I don't know where you're at with a relationship status now. Like, are you in a relationship? Are you looking for a relationship? And how is this project actually helping inform you in your own personal realm today?
I think it'll be more, I am in a relationship. I think if I was out there dating, first of all, I don't really know that I would have, I always put a lot of energy into dating when I'm out and doing apps. So I think it would be hard for me to have that energy because that energy right now is going into the podcast. And so I think it would be difficult. I think it has set certain boundaries because you had asked whether any of the situations re-sparked anything. And I think there may be more confusingness if I was not in a relationship that I care about, not open, I'm very into it. And so I think it has helped me to be in that relationship. And then I think doing the interviews has helped me really appreciate the mature person I'm currently with. So I think it goes in both directions. But yes, I think with a stable person has made it easier to do the hard work of doing a big project. And then it also has made it, even if I didn't, I mean, first of all, I maybe would straight up hook up with people again, or at least there would be a little more of the ambiguity that I think some of us play in for validation. So you have a long, intimate conversation with someone, you may leave, and then 10 minutes later, you think of something funny related to what you say, and you keep it going.
Right.
Being in a relationship helped me to just say, This is the point. So, I think it's been very helpful. And I think I'm all the things that made no sense in a relationship, I now, those issues are not in my current relationship, so I'm also just happy about that.
Yeah. Wow. That makes sense. Well, I mean, if you could say like what your biggest takeaway is or that our listeners can get from this episode, what kind of like thoughts or advice would you give to them?
Oh, I think to not shut the door on the past without doing a little examining. Because like I said, there is some meaning to who we are drawn to. And so looking at that, either yourself with the person, whether it was good or bad, and that it's okay to have a really good feeling about somebody who's no longer your person.
Mm-hmm.
It feels really good. And again, there's situations where there's violence involved and abuse involved. I'm not saying across the board, but I'd say a huge percentage of people, if it just simply didn't work out, I mean, that's the interesting thing about relationships versus friendships. Sometimes there are friend breakups also, but with friendships, generally speaking, there's some endurance there. And there is this strange thing in a relationship where there is an end point. And that doesn't mean that that wasn't a really great thing and that you can have nostalgia for that. And it doesn't mean that you necessarily want to be with that person, but that there's a way to have there be some love between you still. It feels good.
Yeah. Wow. This is so fascinating, Miriam.
Spoken like a true lesbian.
Yeah.
keep in contact.
No. So how do our listeners kind of get in touch with you, or how do they listen to your podcast? Like what can we give them in terms of your contact info?
The podcast will come out on September 21st. It will be everywhere. The trailer is currently out, so I would be very happy for you to listen and subscribe. I'm on Instagram at the X Appeal Podcast. I'm on YouTube and TikTok at X Appeal. And, you know, I'm on Facebook too. And feel free to write to me. I'm down.
Awesome.
DM me. I'll share.
I can't wait to listen.
Yeah, it's I don't feel nervous about putting it out for some reason. We'll see if there's some disaster, but I feel good about the intention. It's not, I'm doing it for the right reasons, and that's all I can have done. I feel really good about the conversation, so I think there's just a curiosity about what will come of it. And I'm very excited about the future conversations. It's not over. I've done 13, and like I said, I want to do 100. So I'm very excited.
Awesome.
That is so cool. Well, and maybe some of the people who are sort of no's or you haven't even heard from yet will hear one of your episodes and say, oh, this isn't as scary as I thought.
I hope that too. Yeah, somebody even from the trailer came out of the woodwork, and so that was, I didn't even have to track that person down. Well, yeah.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. This is unbelievable. We are going to be able to share this with our listeners and really kind of think about this idea about, our past informing our present and our future and really helping people think about how do you unpack and make meaning of things. And so, we're so grateful to have you on, Miriam. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you.
And to all of our listeners out there, until our next episode, go out there and rock those relationships. If you liked what you heard, check out our show notes for resources from today's episode. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram under Rock That Relationship and go to our website at rockthatrelationship.com for updated episodes and more great information.
Thanks for listening. Now go rock those relationships.